Chapter 19 Big Sakuti Island. Okay, sit tight, Sam said to Remy. He brought the cart to a halt and set the parking brake. Ahead he could see the crest of the path. He walked forward until he could see over the rise. 100 feet down the path was a clearing where the road forked up to the main house. To the right of the clearing, sitting under the glow of a pole-mounted sodium vapor lamp, was the helicopter pad. Sam walked back to the cart. Remy asked, "How many?" "I only saw three. The guard, Nochtli, and Yaodl, all standing together at the edge of the pad. They've all got AK-74s, but they're slung over their shoulders. As for the pilot, no sign. He's either at the house or sitting in the helicopter waiting."
"No offense, Sam, but I hope it's the latter. If we convince him to fly us..."
"No offense taken."
"What about the bell?"
"It's not on the Cushman. Looks like they've done the heavy lifting. I'll take the first three. You head straight for the helicopter. You ready?"
"As I'll ever be."
She crouched on the golf cart's floor and ducked her head beneath the fiberglass dashboard. She looked up at him.
"You don't look much like Rivera."
"As long as we get close enough fast enough, it won't matter." Sam withdrew the .357 and the H&K from his pockets, tucked one each beneath a thigh, then released the parking brake and depressed the gas pedal. The car eased forward, and within seconds they were over the crest and heading for the clearing. He resisted the impulse to jam the accelerator to the floorboards. 50 feet to go, he muttered to Remy. "Still haven't seen us." At 30 feet, Yaodl looked up and spotted the cart. He said something to the other two. They turned around. All eyes were on the cart now. "Still no reaction," Sam said. "Hold on tight. I'm going in." He stomped on the gas pedal and the cart accelerated, covering the final 20 feet in a matter of seconds. Sam slammed on the brake, locking the parking mechanism, took his hands off the wheel, grabbed both guns, and jumped out before the trio, just outside the glow of the pole light. He raised both guns. "Evening, gentlemen," he said.
"It's you," said Yaodl.
"Us," Sam corrected. Without a word, Remy climbed from the cart and joined Sam, who told the group, "Everyone act natural. Nothing's changed. Just three guys hanging around. Big smiles, everyone." He and Remy had decided it was best to assume the pad was under observation from the big eyes binoculars on the main house's roof. To avoid arousing suspicion, Yaodl and the other two would have to keep their weapons until Sam and Remy were ready to leave. "Remy, see what you can do about that light." Careful to stay at the edge of its glow, Remy stepped forward and studied the pole.
"No switch, but the cables are coming up from the ground. It looks like standard 110 voltage.
Sam said, "Nice of Okafor to cut corners for us." While 220-volt lines carried enough juice to electrocute, 110 lines carried only enough to cause a painful jolt. "Do you think you can make it to the helo without being seen?"
"I think so. Be right back."
She walked back down the road and ducked into some bushes alongside the helicopter pad. 30 seconds later, she appeared on the opposite side and, using the helicopter to screen her movements, sprinted to the pilot's door. With the pilot under her H&K, she retraced her course and returned to where Sam stood. The pilot was a short black man in dark blue coveralls. His expression was one of genuine fear. Remy said, "The crate's aboard, all strapped down." Yaodl asked Sam, "Where's Rivera?" "Napping." The guard moved his hand, trying surreptitiously to unsling his AK-74. Sam raised the gun and pointed it at his head. "Don't," Sam said, then added in Swahili, "Usifanye hivyo." The guard stopped, let his hand drop. "Remy, do you have them?"
"I have them."
Sam stepped backward and motioned for the pilot to join him. "What's your name?"
"Jingaro."
"You're Okafor's pilot?"
"Yes."
"Your English is good."
"I went to missionary school."
"I want you to fly the helicopter for us."
"I cannot do that."
"Yes, you can."
"If I do, Okafor will kill me.
If you don't, I'll kill you.
Not in the same way he will. And perhaps my family, too. Please, I just fly for him, that's all. I'm not part of this. You see, I don't have a gun. I just fly the helicopter.
Are you lying about your family?
No. It is the truth. I'm sorry, I cannot help you. I do not like Mr. Okafor, but I have no choice.
Sam studied Jingaro's eyes and decided he was telling the truth. Is the helicopter ready to fly?
Yes. Are you a pilot?
Sam shrugged. On rotary, I'm not much past takeoff, hover, and touchdown. Jingaro hesitated, then said,
This one is equipped with a hover coupler. On the far right side of the dash, it is labeled HVCP. As long as your flight level is steady, you can engage the coupler, and the craft will go into auto-hover. Also, the rudder pedals are heavy. I like them that way. It is harder to overcompensate. Do not be afraid to step on them. Keep your airspeed below 100 knots. She's much easier to handle.
Thanks.
You are welcome. Now, hit me.
What?
Hit me. If Okafor suspects,
I understand. Good luck.
And you.
Sam cocked his hand back and slammed his palm on the tip of the pilot's nose. The blow wasn't enough to break bone, but the blood began gushing immediately. The pilot stumbled backward and sprawled onto his back. Stay there, Sam barked. Don't move. Remy, can you see the big eyes from there? She reached her hand behind her, withdrew the binoculars from her pack's side pocket, and aimed them at the house's roof.
I see them. They're pointing to the south right now. Panning slowly this way. Another 30 seconds or so, and they'll have the pad in sight.
Sam looked at the guard.
Unazungumza ki ingereza, he said in Swahili. Do you speak English? Bit English?
Sam pointed at the sheathed machete strapped to his belt and said,
Kisu, puagaku.
Knife. Throw it down. Sam pointed at his feet and barked, Now! The guard unclipped the machete and tossed it toward Sam, who picked it up. To the group he said, Here's the plan, everybody. We're going to walk to the helicopter. We'll go first, and you'll follow feet behind us, spread out in a line.
Why? Asked Yaodl.
You'll be the sandbags if anyone starts shooting at us. Yaodl, make sure the other two understand.
You won't get away with...
Maybe not, but we're going to give it the old college try.
If we say no?
This came from Nochtli. Since you brought it up, you'll be the first one I shoot.
Yaodl said, I do not think you will. Even if you do, the rest of Okafor's guards will be here in under a minute.
Probably so, but you won't be around to see it. Sam took a step forward and leveled the 357 on Yaodl's chest. Remember your stay at our villa?
Yes.
We treated you decently.
Yes.
Well, we're all out of nice. To punctuate his point, Sam raised the 357 so it was level with Yaodl's forehead. Care for some proof? Yaodl shook his head. Make sure the others understand the plan. Yaodl translated first to Nochtli, then to the guard in Pidgin Swahili. Both men nodded. Yaodl said,
Where will you go, Mr. Fargo? If you know how to fly, you wouldn't have been talking to the pilot. If you stop now and surrender...
Sam interrupted. We've had enough of Nightmare Island. We're leaving, and we're taking our bell with us.
The bell? Is it so important you are willing to die for it?
Remy spoke up.
Is it so important that you murdered 9 tourists for it? Sam, he's stalling us.
Sam nodded. Keep an eye on them. I'm going to see about making those carts disappear. Yaodl, take the laces out of your boots and give them to me. Yaodl bent over, removed the laces, balled them up, and tossed them forward. Sam retrieved them and walked to the golf cart. 30 seconds later, the steering wheel was locked down by one of the laces. Sam released the parking brake, braced his arms on the front bumper, and pushed the cart over the crest of the hill, where it started rolling on its own. After a few seconds, it disappeared into the darkness. He then repeated the process with the Cushman and returned to Remy's side. "Ready?" he asked. "A relative term, that." "I don't know how quickly we'll get a reaction once the light goes out, so let's be quick." Sam watched the big eyes on the roof until they moved toward the light pole. Remy stopped him. "Hold on, Sam." Then to Yaodel and the others, "Turn around and face the helicopter." The group complied. "Now look up and stare at the light." Again the group complied. She said to Sam, "To ruin their night vision." Sam smiled. "Yet another reason why I love you." Through his binoculars, he watched the big eyes on the roof until they were pointed to the southwest, then strode forward, knelt beside the light pole, took a breath, and slammed the edge of the machete into the power line. There was a hissing pop and a shower of sparks. Sam jerked his hand back. The light went dark. Remy asked, "Are you all right?" "Yes, but it got my attention. Okay, let's go." They separated, walking clockwise and counterclockwise until they were facing the group. "Walk toward us," Sam ordered. Blinking and shaking their heads against the sudden loss of their night vision, Yaodel and the others started forward. With Remy in the lead and Sam walking backward, his H&K trained on the group, they began moving toward the helicopter. 20 feet away," Remy told Sam. Then, 10 feet. Sam stopped walking. "Stop. Spread out," he ordered. To Remy, "I'm doing pre-flight." "I've got them covered." Sam tossed their packs into the cabin, then opened the pilot's door and climbed inside. Using his penlight, he scanned the controls and panels, doing his best to ignore the Eurocopter's dizzying array of options and concentrate on the essentials. After 30 seconds, he'd found what he needed. He flipped on the battery switch. The interior lamps and control panel glowed to life. Next, he turned on the fuel pump, followed by the auxiliary power switch, which began the pre-start of the turbine. After a few seconds of whining, the turbine kicked in and began to spool up. The rotors began turning, slowly at first, but with increasing velocity as the rotor RPM gauge began climbing. Sam leaned out the window and said to Remy, "Collect their guns." Remy passed the order on to the group, and one at a time, each man stepped forward and tossed his weapon into the helicopter's cargo cabin. Using hand signals, she backed them up until they were just outside the helicopter's rotor radius. In the cockpit, Sam saw the rotor RPM hit 100%. "Time to say goodbye," he shouted to Remy. "Gladly," she yelled back and climbed aboard. With one eye trained on the group, she shoved the weapons into the safety webbing on the bulkhead. "Grab a hold of something," Sam called. She wrapped her free hand around the webbing. "Done." Sam tested the helicopter's cyclic control between his legs, then the collective stick at his side, gauging the blade pitch, then finally the anti-torque foot pedals until he had a feel for them. He engaged the collective, and slowly the helicopter lifted off. He tested the cyclic, moving the helicopter first left, then right, then nose up and down. Remy yelled, "Sam, we've got a problem."
"What?"
"Look right." Sam glanced out the side window. It took a few moments for him to register what he was seeing. Yaodel and the others were scattering across the pad as a dark rectangular shape bumped over the pad's rock-lined perimeter and headed toward the helicopter. It was the Cushman. Sam caught a glimpse of Rivera in the moon's pale glow, hunched over the wheel.
"Nap time's over," Remy called.
"I knew I'd forgotten something," Sam shouted.
"The keys!"
He returned his attention to the controls, working the collective to gain altitude. In his haste, he jerked the cyclic to the right and pressed the rudder pedal. The helicopter dipped right and the tail spun around. He overcompensated. The helicopter dropped straight down, bounced off the pad, rose again. Sam risked another glance out the side window. The Cushman was 30 feet away and closing fast. To one side, a figure.
Nochtli, it looked like, dashed across the pad and threw himself into the Cushman's cargo bed.
"Slow them down," Sam called. "Aim for the engine. Bigger target."
In the back, Remy opened up with one of the AK-74s, firing controlled three-round bursts into the ground ahead of the Cushman, but got no result. She switched targets. Bullets pounded into the cart's front end, sparking off the bumper guards and shredding the fiberglass. Steam gushed from the engine compartment. The Cushman stuttered and began slowing, but not before it slid from view beneath the helicopter. Sam lifted the collective, trying to gain altitude.
"I can't see them anymore," Remy called.
Sam glanced out one side window, then the other.
"Where?"
Suddenly the helicopter lurched sideways and down, the open side door facing the ground. Remy's feet slid out from under her, and she skidded toward the opening. Instinctively, she released her grip on the AK-74 to latch onto the safety harness. The rifle slid down the deck, bounced off the bell's crate, and disappeared out the door.
"We lost an AK," Remy called.
A moment later, a hand appeared in the opening, clawing at the deck for a handhold. Nochtli's head rose into view.
"And we've got a passenger," Remy shouted.
Sam glanced over his shoulder.
"Kick him."
"What?"
"Smash his fingers."
Remy coiled her leg and lashed out, slamming her heel into Nochtli's pinky finger. He screamed, but held on. With a grunt, he heaved his upper torso onto the deck and reached for the tie-down straps attached to the crate. Remy curled her leg for a second strike. From below came three overlapping cracks. Bullets thunked into the cabin's doorway.
"Sam!"
"I hear it. Hold tight, I'm going to try to shake him."
Sam jerked the helicopter to the left and looked out both side windows, trying to locate the source of the gunfire. Below and to the right, Rivera stood in the cargo bed of the Cushman with Remy's fallen AK-74 tucked into his shoulder. The muzzle flashed orange. Sam's passenger's side cockpit window spiderwebbed. He shifted the cyclic again, continuing to slide the helicopter left toward the trees at the edge of the pad. He pulled up on the collective to gain altitude. In the cabin, Remy cocked her leg again and heel-kicked Nochtli in the thigh. Nochtli grunted and collapsed face first onto the deck, shattering his nose. With one hand still entwined in the safety webbing, she reached over her head, groping for one of the weapons. Sam looked left, saw the dark outline of the treetops looming before the window. A bullet tore through the passenger seat headrest, zipped past Sam's chin, and punched through the windshield. He grunted and lifted the collective, but it was too late. Tree limbs scraped the belly of the helicopter.
"Come on, come on," he grumbled.
"Remy, can you—"
"Little busy here."
A branch snagged on the helicopter's tail boom, and the craft spun clockwise like a top. Alarms began blaring in the cockpit. Red and orange lights flashed on the dashboard. Sam worked the cyclic and collective, trying to compensate. Tree limbs slapped at the cockpit window. Remy's hand touched the wooden butt of one of the AKs. She grabbed it, pulled hard, and it slid from the webbing. It stopped. She craned her neck back. The AK's front side was snagged on a strap. In the doorway, Nochtli was pushing himself upright. He hooked one of his knees over the edge of the doorway and began dragging himself toward Remy. Her hand slipped off the AK's butt. Her fingers touched something metallic, tubular. A pistol barrel. She grabbed it, jerked it free of the webbing. Nochtli latched his free hand onto her ankle. Remy set her teeth and swung the pistol in a backhand. The butt caught Nochtli on the side of the chin. His head snapped sideways and his eyes rolled back in his head. Still kneeling, he teetered for a moment, then tipped backward and disappeared through the doorway. She called to Sam,
"He's gone!"
"You okay?"
She gulped a few breaths and replied,
"Shaken and stirred, but still here."
Bullets peppered the fuselage. Sam saw an opening in the canopy and worked the cyclic and rudder pedals, crabbing the nose around until it was pointed in the right direction, then nosed down and lifted the collective. With the shrieking of wood on aluminum, the helicopter lurched forward and into the clear. Now he lowered the collective and dropped the helicopter below the tree line. He stopped in a hover 20 feet above the slope, looked around for the HVCP Jingaro had mentioned, and flipped it on. The helicopter shuddered slightly, slid sideways, dipped, then settled into a steady hover. The alarms and the flashing lights stopped. Sam tentatively took his hands off the controls and exhaled heavily. In the back, Remy scooted sideways and slid the door shut. The thumping of the rotors faded. Sam turned in his seat and extended his hand between the gap. Remy grabbed his hand and pulled herself toward him. Sam asked, "You okay?"
"Yes. You?"
He nodded. "Let's get out of here. I think we've fully worn out our welcome."